Mr. Mikva, we appreciate your willingness and that of the Legal Aid Clinic to accept the appointment in this case and all the assistance you've been. Mr. Ives, thank you very much as well. But you have our reminder that we hope within 10 days to hear whether you really want to pursue the ineffective assistance claim. Case under advisement. We'll hear argument now in the case of Lukes against Baxter Healthcare. Ms. Fryer.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joanna Fryer. I am counsel for the plaintiff appellant in this matter, Peter Lukes. This is an appeal from the granting of summary judgment in favor of an employer, Baxter Healthcare, in an age discrimination case. Mr. Lukes worked for Baxter Healthcare for 20 years, from 1982 until May 2, 2002, when he was terminated for allegedly poor performance. Throughout his tenure at Baxter, prior to his working under John Good, he received multiple promotions, raises, and succeeded in his position, had good reviews from all of his prior supervisors. In August of 2000, he began working under John Good directly. John Good is the vice president of the Architecture, Technology, and Planning Department. Good expressed a desire to, or an inclination, I should say, to review Lukes negatively from day one. 6 months after he began working with Lukes, he started keeping a log on Lukes and kept keeping that log up until the date of his termination. This was not something he did with other employees. In March of 2001, Good decides to put Lukes under the supervision of Carol Kazel. She is the newly appointed, newly hired director of the program office. When Kazel first comes to Baxter, she reviews Lukes' personnel file with him and finds a document that looks like some sort of performance plan document, a blank document, with three names on it: Peter Lukes, Glenn German, and Larry Helseth. These are, as Good admits, the three oldest members of his department at this time. Helseth and German work in a different department under a different direct supervisor, but still under John Good.
Now, of course, Baxter did articulate facially non-discriminatory reasons for terminating Mr. Lukes. What evidence do you have to suggest that these were pretextual? In other words, to show not just that Mr. Lukes didn't agree with these reasons, but that Ms. Kazel and Mr. Good did not honestly believe these reasons.
Of course, Your Honor. There are several factors, actually, that speak to that issue. The first of these is the comments that were made by Good, age-related comments that he wanted to get rid of the good old boys, wanted the good old boys gone. These comments were made in discussions with Cynthia Overby, the supervisor for Helseth and German.
Now, of course, we have case law that says that the use of good old boys
At least in the South, good old boys are generally young.
Are rejected, you know, as an indicum of age discrimination. We have case law.
I do understand that, Judge Rovner, but taken in the entire context of this case, that he wanted to get rid of the good old boys while he's discussing getting rid of Helseth and German, I think it means something a little bit different than just the comment in and of itself. But I do recognize that that case law exists. The most egregious evidence, and I think the most compelling on the issue of pretext, is the discussions that he had with Cynthia Overby, where he instructed her to put her direct reports, Helseth and German, on performance plans with an eye toward termination. He instructed her to give them bad reviews, even though she stated repeatedly that their performance was good, that their good performance was well documented. He insisted that she place them on performance plans following bad reviews with an eye toward termination. She was able to get one of those gentlemen out of the department and find him another job. The other was coincidentally terminated due to a reduction in force prior to the termination taking effect, although with respect to Helseth, Good did express frustration to Overby that things weren't progressing quickly enough in terms of his termination. How this ties into Luke's is that Luke's direct supervisor, Carol Kazel, talks to Overby in November of 2001. This is before the unfavorable year-end review for Luke's, and says that John Good has instructed her to place Luke's on a performance plan, which actually she's not able to put together until 6 months later, in March of 2002. But in November of 2001, he has instructed her to put Luke's on a performance plan, not for any legitimate purpose, just to do it. She doesn't know what Good wants, so she comes to Overby for advice and says, please help me do this. I know you've had to do this for other people. I'll be asking you for advice on how to put this together. In addition to that, we have the documentation for which Baxter has offered no explanation. The document that's in Luke's personnel file when Kazel first comes to Baxter and speaks to him about it that mysteriously disappears 2 days later. Again, a blank performance document of some sort with the names of those three oldest individuals on it. Then we have the documentation also containing the three names that Overby sees during meetings with John Good when he's discussing getting rid of Helseth and German. But Luke's name is on those documents as well. Finally, we have the document which is Good Exhibit Number 11, Good Deposition Exhibit Number 11, my Exhibit W in my response, which is a performance plan objective, again, with the three names of those three individuals written in the top right-hand corner, and a notation concerning a discussion between Good and Human Resources that deals with documenting performance issues with respect to Luke's. The date of this document is February of 01, well before Kazel comes there, well before there's a performance plan in place, well before Luke's gets any bad reviews. So obviously, Good has it in his mind to track Luke's performance and document performance issues, negative performance issues on him, only 5 or 6 months after he begins working for him. The important thing with respect to all these items together is that these three gentlemen, Luke's, Helseth, and German, have nothing in common other than the fact that they worked in Good's department and that they were ultimately forced out of their positions for one reason or another. The only thing they have in common apart from those two things is their age. It is a reasonable inference that this was based on age discrimination, that Good wanted to get rid of them because of their age. The district court concluded that Luke's failed to present direct evidence of discrimination, and under in this circuit, as we know, the standard is that you can present a convincing mosaic of circumstantial evidence to constitute direct evidence. I believe that all of the items that I have just mentioned, in addition to the other evidence referenced in the brief, constitutes direct evidence. But even if it does not, it's certainly sufficient evidence of pretext to withstand summary judgment. The district court held that there was absolutely no evidence presented that Baxter's reason for terminating Luke's was unworthy of credence. It is difficult to understand how there can be no evidence that their reason for terminating him is unworthy of credence when, in fact, he is instructing supervisors of the three oldest members of his department to essentially make up reasons for terminating them, to put them on performance plans and to terminate them. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Ms. Fryer. Ms. Mellinger.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, I'm Michelle Mellinger here on behalf of Appellee Baxter Healthcare Corporation. You know, it is very common for employees to dispute their performance deficiencies. Indeed, it's far easier to point the finger at someone else rather than to admit failure. However, it is well established in the circuit that a mere disagreement with a supervisor's assessment of performance is simply not enough to establish unlawful discrimination.
Well, but would the evidence at least permit the information, the inference that Mr. Good had an agenda to purge the department of, Mr. Lux, Mr. German, the other fellow, and that supervisors like Ms. Castle were giving marching orders to make that happen? I mean, you've got their names popping off on some mysterious list, and they're put on these similar remedial plans, and so forth.
Given the undisputed evidence, there is no reasonable inference that can be drawn that the decision to terminate Mr. Luke's employment was a pretext for unlawful age discrimination. When you look at the evidence as it relates to the two other employees, Glenn German and Larry Helseth, the evidence simply establishes that Carol Castle and John Good disagreed over the assessment of their performance. At no time did Cynthia Overby testify that she believed it had anything to do with their age, nor did she comment at all with Mr. Good about Mr. Luke's and how that might have anything to do with his employment situation. And in fact, she had nothing to do with his evaluation or the termination decision from the program office.
But these three employees, these were the oldest employees in the department, and all three of them were put on this performance improvement plan. Nobody else was put on the plan, right?
Well, there's no evidence in the record that there were not any other performance improvement plans. And in fact, Stephen Marcus, as we cited, is a comparable in that he was put on a plan, did not meet the performance objectives of the plan, and he also was terminated, and he was under 40 years old.
Was he in her department?
Yes. The testimony with respect to this plan to get rid of Luke's or any directive by John Good to have Carol Castle put him on a plan, the undisputed evidence establishes that Carol Castle was his direct supervisor. Carol Castle was the one evaluating his performance. She is the one who drafted the performance review of Does Not Meet Expectations. She was the one who drafted the performance plan and ultimately evaluated him against that plan and determined that because he only met 9 out of the 28 objectives, that his employment needed to be terminated. John Good simply supported that decision and agreed with those decisions along the way. Now, there's this bit about John Good coaching Carol Castle through the process. The reality was Carol Castle was new at Baxter in that she had never placed anyone on a plan before, and therefore he coached her in that he explained to her that if you give an employee a does not meet expectation rating, that you need to put together a performance plan in order to get that employee up to standards, and you need to identify specifically how to do, what the employee needs to do within that day period, and also instructed her to go to human resources to discuss how to go about putting him on that plan. The fact that she may have expressed frustration to Cynthia Overby over having to put him on this plan is not evidence that anyone directed her or that she was asked to fabricate the plan. In fact, there is no evidence that she did not have an honestly held belief that he did not meet Baxter's performance expectations. And she was the one primarily making the decision. And in fact, it was Mr. Loops who went to John Good and said, I don't think this is fair, and I think she's trying to set me up for termination. And in fact, he doesn't have any evidence whatsoever that Carol Castle had it out to get him because of his age. As the district court found, these documents at issue, these other two employees, none of this even hints at discriminatory intent because of age. He has no evidence of age discrimination. Going back to counsel's point that Mr. Luke's had been a long-term employee and never had any performance issues. Well, while it is true that he did have meets expectations reviews, it is also true that we cited in the last 5 years of his performance a number of criticisms, constructive criticism, as to how he can improve his performance, including his communications with his clients, which ultimately became a very big issue with respect to his follow-up with his clients in order to effectively implement the prioritization process. And we're referring to plaintiff's counsel referred to John Good keeping a log on Mr. Luke's. Well, the fact of the matter is that he began supervising Mr. Luke's directly before he placed him into the program office. And he, in fact, did his 2000 year-end review in which the two of them did disagree over some performance issues, but ultimately John Good did agree to change a few, but he also had criticisms with respect to Mr. Lukes' performance in his job, and that his testimony is not that he kept a log sort of spying on him and didn't keep a log for somebody else. He simply testified, and the evidence establishes that he simply kept notes when he had conversations with Mr. Lukes, when Mr. Lukes and he would go to lunch, and he would ask questions about what direction he ought to be going at Baxter. Mr. Good took notes about that. He also took notes about an issue that Mr. Lukes had with one of his subordinates not listening to him, and a conflict that the two of them had, and how Mr. Good had resolved it. I believe this court has already identified that has already recognized that a good old boy's comment is not evidence of age discrimination, particularly where Lukes misstates the context in which that was made. That comment, the good old boys club, was in reference to the technical leadership team at Baxter, which had been around a long time. Contrary to what Lukes says, it was not even in discussion about Larry Helseth and Glenn German's performance. Certainly was not in any way connected to Lukes' performance, as Cynthia Overby testified that she didn't have any discussions with Mr. Good about Mr. Lukes. Counsel did not touch on the final evidence of pretext, which is the alleged disparate treatment with respect to other employees in the department. And the undisputed evidence establishes first that Nathan Habeck and Terry Stevens are not similarly situated in all material respects. They were below Mr. Lukes. They were not at his same level. There's no evidence that they were subject to the same standards or that they had the same responsibilities. But in any event, most importantly, there has been no evidence that they engaged in similar conduct but were treated differently than Mr. Lukes. And in fact, with respect to the status reports and the requirement that he show the effectiveness of the prioritization process, the evidence shows that those individuals did not have deficient performance as he did and therefore were not subject to discipline. And in any event, Lukes keeps commenting that those individuals on the status reports did not get a does not meet expectations. Well, he didn't either as it related to status reports. He conceded that he needed to improve on that. That was a comment in his review. But his review and the other reviews, none of them contained a does not meet expectation rating with respect to that particular category. The district court, as evidenced by its opinion, carefully considered all of Lukes' alleged direct evidence of age discrimination, both under the direct and indirect evidence theory, and ultimately concluded that there was absolutely no evidence of age discrimination. There's no evidence to call into question Carol Kazel's honestly held belief that Pete Lukes was not meeting Baxter's legitimate performance expectations. Lukes' focus on other employees' situations is a red herring, given that, number one, they have no connection to his employment, but more importantly, there is no connection to age discrimination. The same is true with respect to the suspect documents that they're referring to. In fact, two of the three documents, Lukes does not even know what they contain. Cynthia Overby simply testified that John Good had a paper that had the two names, Larry Helseth and Glenn German, on it while she was discussing their performance. I don't know how that could possibly be suspect. And in any event, Lukes suggests that that Baxter does not have an innocent explanation for the documents. Well, it's not Baxter's burden to prove an innocent explanation for the documents, but rather Lukes' burden to prove that there's some sort of inference of discrimination that can be drawn from the documents. And given that the contents of the documents and the testimony about the documents, there absolutely can be no inference of age discrimination as it relates to those three documents. Ultimately, given all the evidence in the case, Baxter Healthcare respectfully requests that this court uphold the grant of summary judgment in its favor. I'm happy to entertain any further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Mellinger. Anything further, Ms. Pryor?
Just a few points, Your Honor.
The list that I was speaking of earlier was not the only list of items that point to pretext. Counsel keeps saying that Ms. Kazel, there's no indication that Ms. Kazel didn't honestly believe the standards by which she was evaluating him. That's simply not the case. There is a lengthy section in my statement of facts that describes the numerous inconsistencies, duplications, and inaccuracies in the performance reviews and the performance plan. Lukes repeatedly brought these to her attention, and she refused to fix them. I believe the evidence shows, or at least supports the inference, that she was directed by Good to put him on a performance plan. She came to Overby for advice because she didn't know how to do it. Not from a practical standpoint, but she didn't know what to include because there really were no true performance issues of the magnitude that needed to be included in a performance plan. This is why there are inconsistencies, repetitions, and inaccuracies. Recognizing that employers rarely come out and say, I'm terminating you because of your age, an employee is allowed to prove their case through circumstantial evidence that suggests that the employer's reason for termination is unworthy of credence. All of the factors that are cited in my brief and that I've reiterated here today certainly support the inference that the employer's stated reason here is unworthy of credence. At a minimum, it creates genuine issues of material fact that should be submitted to a jury and should not be decided by the district court. We respectfully request that you reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment and remand the case for trial. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.